I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
A very warm welcome to London in Winter and to the last motorsport podcast of 2009. In just 2 weeks from today, it will be Christmas Day. So let's get this out of the way and wish you all a very, very happy Christmas, and we'll see you again in 2010. Thank you, everybody, for sending in so many questions and for your feedback on the website. It's all very much appreciated. I can assure you we read every single comment and we take them all into account. That's your criticisms and your compliments. I'm joined round the table again today by our editor-in-chief, Nigel Roebuck, the magazine's editor, Damien Smith, and our award-winning reporter, Ed Foster. Let me come straight away this month to criticisms, which I just mentioned. Last time we all got together, John Watson was our guest, and if we have any Kimi Räikkönen fans still listening, well, I'll be amazed. Anyway, if you're out there, we thought that we ought to have a bit of balance, as John himself would say, in the discussions we had about, in particular, Kimi Räikkönen and various other characters, including, of course, his former teammate, the multiple world champion, Niki Lauda. Now, Niki's a man of few words. We all know that. But we thought it would be fun to find out what Niki thought of John's comments on the podcast. And I think, really, we should begin with John's allegation that Niki was prone to taking his qualifying tyres.
This is me. Well,
this is you.
It's me, okay, because John was never around at the right time to take the tyres.
Me
was back in the hotel or was not around and didn't put in the right time, did the wrong thing.
John's big thing, I think, is that, you know, to be a world champion even once, you've got to be ruthless. Do you think this is ruthless?
What, me or him?
Well, certainly not him. I mean, I wouldn't want to call you ruthless.
No, I was not you. I was not ruthless. I was forceful, but I like my way, but I'm democratic too.
So the thing about it really, Niki, I think, is that it seems unnecessarily controversial, really. Do you not feel? I mean, either you're going to do the job, get it done, and go away, or not.
Exactly. Exactly. Turn up, drive the car, win the race, go home.
Finally, what might be your view on a slightly different subject? Of, you know, people are talking now, you know, typically in England, everyone's discussing should Button have won the world championship, should he not, did he deserve it? What's your take on that?
But Button? Yeah, won more races? Easy, no problem. Simple. Yeah, won the championship, won more races than Hamilton the year before? It's easy. He wins most races, does the best job, take the championship. Again, go home.
Thank you very much, Niki. Well, I hope that has redressed the balance slightly. And of course, as we all know, it's always entertaining to hear from the Austrian world champion, who, let's give him a little plug, is of course the commentator on every Grand Prix for German television. Anyway, over the next 45 minutes or so, we'll be talking about that very man, Jenson Button, moving to McLaren. What might this mean for him and for Lewis Hamilton? Then, of course, there's the very exciting news of Mercedes coming into Grand Prix racing as Mercedes-Benz. The silver arrows are back. Then there's Renault. Are they going to withdraw? The team, we hear, is up for sale. So what will happen? And then, towards the end of our show today, our esteemed editor, Damien, will give us a rundown on what's in the next edition of Motorsport magazine, and he'll be telling us about a brand new columnist who's joining us in 2010. So, Nigel, let's come to you first. Jenson Button goes to McLaren. Now, according to Ross Brawn, he was offered more money by Brawn than he's being paid by McLaren. They wanted to keep him, but he's gone. What's your take on that?
I think I'm probably as mystified as anybody. I mean, I've spoken to various people about this, and I haven't really got a satisfactory answer from anywhere. And I'm not even sure what sort of answer I'm looking for, because I was at McLaren's a couple of weeks ago, and they said they were absolutely sure, for instance, that, you know, the offer they had made to him was financially was actually less than the one on the table from Ross. What makes it difficult to understand is that right after Jensen won the championship, and the stories first started circulating that, no, there wasn't yet a new deal with Braun, and then we began to hear that, so it's a bit of a sticking point. Things aren't working out very well. He's not happy with the offer he's got from Ross. And Richard Goddard, his manager, was making it clear that, there's more money in the team now than there was. And essentially what he was saying was, in Jensen, he's won the world championship and he should have his fair share of it. So it did appear at that time to be very much about money, that... Fundamentally, Jensen and Richard Goddard didn't feel that Ross's offer, you know, was in line of what they might reasonably expect. So then the next thing was that there was news of contact between Jensen and McLaren. Hmm. And I confess at the time, my first thought was, it doesn't do any harm, go and have a look.
Might get a bit more money out of Braun.
Exactly, and puts pressure on. I mean, it's the oldest trick in the book. It's happened forever. And then, you know, in very short order, yeah. we hear that he has actually done a deal and he's going to be with Hamilton, and deal done.
Dream team, apparently.
Well, in many respects, it's a dream team. Certainly, Vodafone think it is. I mean, it's all they could absolutely all they could dream of: two British world champions together. The problem is, I mean, Jensen himself has said that it wasn't money, and I'm getting actually less from McLaren than Braun were offering me, Mercedes. And I need a new challenge. Well.
He sure has got one.
He sure has. But the problem is, you know, that is the oldest cliche in the book, isn't it? Everybody is always, you know, it's always a new challenge, whether you're changing jobs, marriages.
Spend more time with your family.
All that, you know, a new challenge. So that's really all we have to go on. And as you point out, you know, he certainly has got a new challenge now. But I'm not actually disbelieving Jensen.
No.
Because I can't... otherwise see any reason why this has happened.
But do you think he knows something that we don't, and the fact how much Braun sacrificed laying off who they laid off and sort of bringing the team down to a much smaller number of people? I mean, do they think that... does he think that McLaren is really a much surer bet that is to be with a competitive team?
Possibly he does. I mean, we don't know the ins and outs because, you know, no information has come out about this. I mean, did he think that now the Mercedes had taken over Braun, perhaps it might not be quite as it used to be, even though Ross is continuing to run it, and Nick Fry, did he think that that might mean changes and maybe he wouldn't enjoy the changes? The thing that surprises me is that he's left behind all that familiarity.
Yeah.
The relationships, you know, like Andrew Shovlin, his race engineer and so on.
Yeah.
And he's moving into an arena, if you like, when Lewis has had all that going for him for a long, long time.
Yeah. If we take it at face value that it is for a new challenge, this could be a Grand Prix driver who actually does care about his legacy, maybe. That he still has, despite being a world champion, he still feels some insecurity about how he's viewed. That he really wants to prove to everyone and to himself that he can take on someone as good as Lewis in the same team, in what's considered to be Lewis's team, and show the world that he can beat him. If that is the case, I'm not sure it is, but if it is the case, then...
Good on him.
Yeah, absolutely. You know.
The thing is, if he goes to McLaren, when he goes to McLaren, if and when he beats Lewis, everyone knows that it's very much Lewis's team, and he's sort of ingrained there. He will be applauded just for that. He doesn't have to beat him over a season, I don't think, even to match him. I think he will get a fair amount of respect for that.
I think he does. Yeah, I mean, I think if he's stated his intention of taking up a new challenge, he's got to go quicker than Lewis.
I think he has to beat him over a season. I think he has to beat him over a season, really. Jensen will beat Lewis on certain days next year.
No question about that.
Well, I mean, Alonso didn't beat Lewis over a season, but a lot of people could still consider him a better driver than Lewis.
But equally, Lewis didn't beat Alonso over a season. All I would say at this point is that I think it's very easy to look upon Hamilton and Button and say, well, you know, Lewis is blindingly quick. We all know that. I mean, Lewis is incredibly quick, incredibly brave. Yeah. And full of drama and all the rest of it, but I think I was writing my column for the next issue this weekend, and something I mentioned there was just to look back 30 years to the Ferrari team, where there was Villeneuve and Scheckter, and Gilles was the guy who provided all the drama and the blazing speed and genius, and Jody won the championship.
Which is what Nicky Lauda referred to just a few minutes ago, really, which is, you know, getting your head down and doing...
He's already flown off to Austria, hasn't he? He's already gone out of the building, gone.
No, I'm still here.
No, he's
I'm just leaving, but I can still talk.
This is going to cost us money in a minute. It moves us very neatly onto the whole Mercedes-Benz, which for me... Well, hold on. The best story of this year for me is Kimi Raikkonen going to... be in a rally car, but we'll put that to one side for a moment. Mercedes-Benz coming back into Grand Prix racing, and boy, you know, my view for what it's worth is they will do it very well indeed, and it will give Ross Brawn even greater resources than perhaps he even had at Ferrari, who knows. And why Button should want to walk away from that, I cannot imagine. Damien, exciting news, isn't it? Mercedes coming back, yes?
Yes, it is, yeah. Obviously, we had a lot of bad news this year with manufacturers pulling out, and for Mercedes to put even more resources in and go back in as a full-blown manufacturer for the first time since 55 is very significant, you know, and it's good news. I think, you know, Ross's place in racing history is very secure, given what he's achieved at Ferrari now this year at Brawn. And anything he can do at Mercedes will only add to that, and he'll do a lot. You know, we know the team is sound. You know, maybe Jensen did see something in the team's form, the way it fell away in the second half of the season, that he thought McLaren's form increased. You know, a dog of a car at the start of the year. By the end of the year, amazing turnaround, as we wrote about in our last issue. So, you know, maybe he saw something in that McLaren long term have more potential, but. It's all speculation at the moment, but Mercedes will be competitive. Nico Rosberg's an interesting signing. I think he could be he'll win races for them. I think whether he's a champion or not will remains to be seen. He hasn't had a chance to prove himself. A little bit like Jensen, really, in a shorter time frame because he's only been around since 06 in Formula One. But I think Nico will surprise people. He'll win races. He drove well this year, so he just needs the car now to step up to the next level.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that.
I don't think Rosberg will win races.
You don't?
No.
Really?
No.
Why?
Because I think that he hasn't shown, to me anyway, signs of real brilliance. I thought the Williams was a good car this year. All right, it wasn't a great car, it wasn't the best car, but I thought it was a good car, and I think he should have done better.
I think he looked...
Well, he scored 35 points, and that was the Williams sum total.
Yeah,
yeah, but that being pitched against Nakajima, you're going to look better than perhaps you are.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I think he's a very safe driver, whether he's a Heidfeld or not. I hope not. But
No, I think he's more than that. I definitely think he's more than that.
I'd love Rosberg to do well, you know, but because of the history and Keke, and he's a great lad. I mean, you know, he talks well and he's exciting to watch. I hope he does do well. But
I was actually speaking to Keke last week, and something he somewhat irreverently said at one point when we were discussing the Brawn Mercedes situation and the implications for McLaren and Mercedes, and Keke just said. Anybody ask McLaren what they're going to do with the top two floors of the motorhome this year?
Good old Keke, I say. Fantastic. But it's going to be, you know, they're going to be painted up silver arrows. I think this is quite an exciting prospect.
Yeah, Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's a nice touch to the past as well, obviously. So, and it's a nice tag, isn't it, the Silver Arrows tag. So, I think it's interesting that you know, having a German driver was important to them. You know, that hasn't been something. Yeah. You know, they haven't really, as a engine partner, I think nationality never really came into driver choice, did it?
They would love to have two German drivers,
they would, and of course the one they would love most of all
is Michael Schumacher.
Is Michael Schumacher.
But it's not going to happen.
I think it probably is not going to happen, but at the same time, I don't believe it's hot air.
No.
Because if it were going to be Heidfeld, why the hell haven't they announced him long ago? You know, why didn't they announce him with Nico?
My sources, which is a phrase I love. Yes. It sounds like New Labour.
Yeah.
God forbid.
My
sources tell me that it will be the team's test driver from 2009 who will join Rosberg at Mercedes-Benz. That's what I've heard.
Yeah.
I believe his name's Anthony Davidson.
That wouldn't be a stupid signing.
Well, you could be right.
Yeah. Anyway, Ed, we haven't heard much from Ed today. Ed, do you think the famous Michael Schumacher will come back?
Well, if anyone his age was going to make a comeback, then it'd probably be him. But I think he's too old. He is, though. I mean, if you look at the people coming in, they are 18, 17 years old. It's ridiculous how young people are when they come into the sport nowadays. And Schumacher is unbelievably fit for his age. He's achieved everything he needs to achieve, but the competitive spirit is obviously still there. We've seen it with the motorbikes, with his possible return when Felipe Massa had his accident this year. So if anyone was going to do it, he probably would. But I don't see it. I don't see him coming in and beating all these young guns over a season. I know how good he is. I know how quick he is and what he can do, but I just think his time has come and gone.
I don't think he's too old. I mean, I can't remember how old Niki Lauda was when he came back from retirement to win a world championship, but he wasn't a young man.
He was 34.
34, yeah.
Thanks, Niki.
I think probably saying too old was perhaps a bit much, but I think he would have come back after Massa's accident. Because it wouldn't have been for a full season. He wouldn't have had to...
There's no way in the world he'd have jumped into a Kurs Ferrari without testing it, in my view. Neck or no neck.
Well, yeah, it's a...
That's a good point.
It's a good point.
Yeah.
It's a good point. On the other hand, he did announce that he was doing it.
Hmm. I think he thought better of it. I don't know.
Well, maybe you might be right. I mean, I actually was perfectly prepared to believe he would do that. I mean, Felipe is his great pal, and he's been clearly bored out of his mind for a long time. And the idea of coming back just for a little while, you know, I think was irresistible.
Yeah, he could have gone and started an airline or something to keep himself. Yeah. But he didn't.
But it's a different thing to come back full time. But you know, again, who knows what is going on in the background? Can you imagine, for instance, what it would mean to if Mercedes could land Michael Schumacher and conceivably for the rest of his life
with Ross Brawn dream team.
I don't think it would even be something to bother talking about if it were not Ross.
I agree.
No,
absolutely.
I mean, if Michael has ever idolized anybody in his life, it's Ross Brawn.
Sure.
And with good reason.
Yep.
We shall see. We're a bit more balanced redressing coming up now, because we're going to talk about Kimi Raikkonen going rallying, which, as I say, I think is really very such exciting news. We're all this week supporters, aren't we?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Definitely.
Yeah.
We're all one.
Support, we like Kimi, don't we?
Yeah, particularly when he's driving properly.
Yeah. I mean, an exciting man to watch.
Yeah.
Very quick.
Yeah. He's a fantastic, when he's on form, he is fantastic to watch and everything else. Never, I have to say, fantastic to talk to, ever.
No.
But on his day, a genius.
Car control.
Yeah.
Exactly, but why doesn't he use it every weekend, Rob? That's my point.
I wouldn't say.
The Ferrari guy at Monza said to me, there's half a dozen great drives in 2 years. You know, we can't have a number one driver like that.
No. Citroën have him now, so Citroën will have to cope with the inconsistency.
Well, it's just for the World Rally Championship, which has not been going through a very good time, it's just such great news for them. You know, to have a Formula One world champion who, you know, despite his patchy form, is still one of the top racing drivers in the world, make the switch in this day and age to rallying in a proper car is just fantastic. I mean, and you know, the accidents are going to be something else for starters, but you know, I think he'll get the hang of it. And you know, given that the rallying is dominated by so few drivers, he'll get some results. Maybe not straight away, maybe it'll take some time. And if it's an experiment, well, good on him for doing it in such a high profile
arena. Yeah, that's what I love about Kimi, is that, you know, there's been talk of Loeb trying an F1 car and maybe racing it, and it's like, maybe, maybe not, and you never quite know. Kimi's like, oh, okay, let's go and do it.
Let's do it, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's him. That's, you know, that is absolutely him.
He did very well in the rally that he did in Finland. A lot of people were very impressed by his driving on ice and snow. I think it'll be extremely exciting, I must say, and we shall see what happens. But anyway,
well, he's Finnish, you know, and they are born to this.
Sure,
you know, I mean, Kimi has always been happy in a car that's sliding, moving around. As I say, you know, they're put on earth to do this. By the time they're 12, you know, that's what they're used to. Well, I think in many ways he'll be much more in his element. Yeah, in the rally world than in Formula 1.
I agree completely. Yeah.
And I can't wait to see those press conferences with Loeb and Raikkonen sit beside each other. They're going to be amazing.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, yes.
Really good.
Will somebody speak? Please. Please, somebody speak. Yes, that.
I don't know if you heard that, everybody, but that was Nicky's helicopter just.
bye, everybody.
Well, the Christmas spirit is with us. Right. Silverstone, another British story, a bit like Button and Hamilton, but an important story because Silverstone is one of the very few good Formula One circuits that remain in the world today that's being used. And they've got the contract for the British Grand Prix for 17 years. This is great news, Damien.
Fantastic news. I mean, we all wanted it to happen. I think all along we all doubted the Donington story, whether it was actually going to ever come to pass. I mean, Simon Gillette's still being very punchy now, saying that you know, it was only the economic downturn and the banks that scuppered his plans, and that it would have happened had it not been for that. And Silverstone have been lucky, is you know, he was quoted as saying, which is just, you know, anyway, whatever. The good news is it's back at the proper place. You know, Silverstone deserve a Grand Prix. I think the club, the BRDC, you know, it's run properly these days. There's a proper financial team in place, and it's taken time, but I'm sure that time was needed to make sure that the detail with Bernie was correct. And the plans for the future are interesting. The new track plans, we published a map in the last issue, which they're going to use for MotoGP next year when the bikes come to Silverstone as well. They could be used for Formula One eventually, probably from 2011. And it looks like an interesting layout. I mean, Silverstone, as we knew it, is almost gone now, you know, in terms of the old circuit.
Yeah.
And it's a shame to an extent, because obviously it was a great fast circuit in you know, the old airfield circuit in its own way, very own character. That's changing, but you know, the world's changing and Silverstone has to change with it.
But the good thing is that, you know, when you speak to drivers about Silverstone and journalists as well, it's about cops, Becketts, Maggots. It's that end of the circuit that hasn't been touched. I think that's pretty important.
That's true, yeah. And there's still plenty of quick corners there. And even with these changes that are coming up, there'll still be plenty to challenge drivers.
And in fact, I mean, people are lamenting that the bridge will be lost. But honestly, bridge, you know, is not what it was. But it's easy flat. The approach isn't, you know, it used to be an absolutely flat-out approach, and then it really was. It was almost like Eau Rouge in the old days.
Yeah. Well, once you got the Abbey chicane in there, it changed completely.
Yeah, it did. So I don't think that's in itself any great loss. Mm. I mean, the interesting thing about this is that it's almost like Jensen and McLaren, you know. So there is an element of mystery. How the hell... You know, we've had years and years and years and years of Bernie banging on about, we don't need a British Grand Prix, I'll be gone, you know, we'll have a race in Patagonia or whatever. And then suddenly, bang, it's all happened. Now, you know, there is a suggestion that Bernie has actually given way financially, given ground, which may well be true, but, you know, I guarantee you we'll never know that, because... You know, word,
absolutely,
want to get out. But I hear that he's been under severe pressure from CVC.
Mm-hmm.
to, for Christ's sake, don't lose the British Grand Prix, you know, even if we don't make a fortune out of it, which is, if true, is good to hear, because CVC aren't normally terribly altruistic. But I think it's just common sense.
Yes.
It would be a farcical thing to lose the British Grand Prix. But the interesting thing too is that now the deal's been done for 17 years, clearly a huge amount of investment is going to come in from outside, which never was allowed at one time. Now the BRDC has sort of opened the doors to outside investors, and it looks as though with a long-term deal in place, then they are prepared to come in and, you know, put their money where their mouth is, which is all good too.
Well, it's come a long way in a short time. You think, you know, when Jackie Stewart was president, you know, he was trying to push was it St Modwen through to be, you know, third-party financial backers, and he was frustrated by the club members fighting him every inch of the way, and it didn't happen. The club was almost torn apart at that time.
Yeah,
that was only a few years ago, wasn't it? 3 or 4 years ago. It's not long ago,
and
incredible change at the, up at the club. But, you know, I think they're desperately trying to get away from the old Blazer kind of attitude.
I went to the meetings in those days, and some of them were pretty close to sort of, you know, civil war.
Yeah,
it was a. Dare I say it, on occasions there was a sort of almost a dad's army, you know, feel about what was going on. But in the end, I mean, if we were going to keep a British Grand Prix, they couldn't realistically be anywhere else.
No.
I mean, I was never ever persuaded that Donington could have coped, much as I liked it before it got vandalised and torn up. I always thought Silverstone was the only logical place once they decided there were no, you know, they weren't going near Brands Hatch again, but on safety grounds, Formula One Brigade. So it had to be Silverstone.
I think it's.
I'm just glad it survived.
As Nigel said just now, I think it's great that they've also got this really long deal that's, you know, almost unheard of. They spend years getting these short-term deals. And if you're getting one of those, it's very hard to justify spending millions and millions of pounds on track development and, you know, new pits, new paddock and all this kind of stuff. So hopefully with that time frame they're now working in, they can, you know, really pull out the stops, safe in the knowledge that they've got it for that amount of time.
Good. Well, it's all good, positive stuff. But I must say, Nigel's point about how did this occur suddenly is interesting. Let's look at some of your questions now. We've had, as usual, a lot of questions in this month. And we have one here from Mario Carneiro Neto. I hope I've pronounced that right, Mario. Who wants to know whether we think that Felipe Massa has a chance of real success next year. He makes the point that everybody goes on about Button, Alonso and Hamilton, and what he says about Felipe Massa, who we must remember has been extremely close to winning the world championship.
Lauda's coming back.
He's coming back. Oh no.
No. It's okay. I'm going.
I thought he'd forgotten his cap then.
No. Auf Wiedersehen, gentlemen.
Auf Wiedersehen. Hey, danke. Damien, I mean, Massa.
I think he's got every chance of being competitive again if he's recovered completely from his injuries. I mean, you know, we've seen it with Mika Hakkinen when he had his big accident at McLaren in Adelaide. And he came back from a very, very serious accident where he could have died.
True.
And it was only Sid Watkins who saved his life at the side of the track. He went on to win 2 world championships. So it really depends on the injury and if he's recovered. I think mentally, I think he'll be ready for it. I think he'll be prepared and raring to go. I don't think there's much doubt about that, as far as we can see. Just his attitude, the way he's conducted himself since the accident suggests that. But we'll see. I think he'll be in a competitive car next year. He's going to have a very hard time with a teammate like Alonso. But Massa's come on a long way in the last few years, and he, you know, I think has every chance to win races. Whether he's got a championship in him again, I don't know, but we'll see.
Judging by his recent go-karting exploits, he's certainly on the pace behind the wheel. He did very well.
Yeah, and I think there's no question, in the right circumstances, he has a championship in him. I mean, in 08, he won more races than the world champion.
And
you know, and if
And lost it by 100 metres.
And if Glock's tyres had lasted a few more seconds, he would have been world champion then.
Yeah.
And I think also, I think he put a marker down as well that day, because I don't ever remember seeing a Grand Prix driver in a situation like that. In extremis, there he was in Brazil in front of his own people, and he just dominated the race.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And he lost the world championship in the last few seconds. And I thought the way he behaved was very, very impressive. And I thought it said a great deal for him.
Hmm.
And I can think of an awful lot of people who wouldn't have behaved as well as that. So I think, yeah, he has got a championship in him. And I think the other thing you've got to bear in mind is, you know, we've all been saying, you know, rah, 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 Kimi Raikkonen, wasn't he really great and all the rest of it. Of course he is. When he's in the mood, he is fantastic. But Kimi Raikkonen is the highest paid racing driver there has ever been. Massa has paid a fraction of what Kimi. In 08, Kimi won 2 races. Massa won 6. So
the fact speaks on that basis,
I mean, I'm fascinated actually to see how Massa and Alonso works out. Because I do believe that Alonso is the best all-round racing driver on earth. And I'm fascinated to see how Alonso, with his way of working, his way of driving and everything else, works for Ferrari. I suspect it will work tremendously well. He's a Latin, and they love that. They just love that.
Well, Nigel, that's the only reason
And he's a motivational force. That's the other thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's the only reason I doubt Massa having a championship in Ferrari is because of Alonso.
Yes.
You know, that guy beside him, I think it's going to be very hard for him to do it. But
I think so.
On talent alone, I think he's got nothing to prove now.
No, that's true. So. I agree. I'm sure he'll be exactly as he was. I've no doubts about that.
Our next point comes from Edward, who comes from San Diego. And he wants to know whether we think that Button and Hamilton will be given equal equipment at McLaren. I know we've already talked about Button and Hamilton, but I think this is a particular point from Edward. Let's ask our own Ed.
Well, they've made it very clear that they're going to give them the same equipment. But whether they can actually physically do that, I mean, if they're bringing new technology onto a car, I mean, sometimes they can't get it ready for 2 cars, can they? I mean, as we saw with Heikki and Lewis, Heikki was very much driving a sort of B-spec car at some of the races because they just didn't have time to get all the bits and pieces there. So I'm sure they will, but, you know, they have struggled in the past to do that.
If they have to push on big developments in the second half of the season and one of them is well ahead of the other in the championship, then one of them will get priority, which is fair enough. I think from the start of the season, though, there's no doubt that McLaren will give them equal treatment and they'll have the same opportunity to perform. That's what's good about McLaren. That's what we like about McLaren.
Yeah, no, I'm sure that's true. I mean, it certainly was the case in the season just past that there were times when, you know, there was one lot of new bits, and of course Lewis got them, quite rightly. I mean, that was a situation. I mean, by then, you know, Heikki had become very, very much the number two. You know, there were no doubts in anybody's mind. It's slightly more complicated now because these are two world champions. But the other thing you've got to remember about 09 was that, you know, all season long, after an appalling start, McLaren were on fast forward. So it was always going to be the case once in a while. There'd be just, right, there's one lot of new bits, and obviously Lewis gets them.
Yeah.
But I think in normal circumstances, I have no doubts whatever, they will get exactly the same.
The next subject is it comes from David Fisher, and David's asking all of us whether we think the kind of racing that we saw back in the 60s will ever come back. And I'm not absolutely certain what David means by this, because after all, there was not all the racing in the 60s was fantastically exciting. But I think I know what he's getting at, which was that it was at least you could overtake, and at least there was, you know, that kind of excitement. I may as well throw my 2 pence in here, and I think not, because I think that life very rarely goes backwards. Nigel?
No, I would agree with that. I mean, if we go back 40 years to Silverstone in 69, that extraordinary race between Stewart and Rindt, that actually would be quite hard for relatively young watchers of Formula One to believe, probably, that, you know, that they were changing order every lap. Yeah. I mean, it was an extraordinary race,
like a bike race.
Yeah. I mean, it's very rarely the case. God, we talk about the lack of overtaking in Formula One. How rarely do you see a car that has been overtaken then repass? That was what they did for virtually the entire Grand Prix, and of course, in part, that was because of the unsophisticated aerodynamics of their cars, and also in part because of the layout of the circuit. That was the old circuit, the old Silverstone, with no chicanes, whatever, flat out woodcut, and it lent itself to racing. And I think, I mean, if people who look back on the 60s and you know, even the 70s with sort of fond memories and all the rest of it, of course they do, and I understand it, you know, as well as anybody. Mm. But it is a fact that by no means were all the races great.
No.
Some of them were processional. Mm. A number of races, Jimmy Clark, you know, just disappeared.
Yeah.
And Jackie then later did the same.
Yeah.
But I think something that is sometimes overlooked is, I mean, I can remember, for instance, when I first, very early days when I first started doing this, I went to the Nürburgring in 73, and it was completely dominated by the Tyrrells, Stewart and Savin. They finished first and second, you know, a few feet apart. Jackie Ickx, interestingly enough, was third in that race on his one and only drive in a McLaren. But it was not a close race in terms of, you know, Jackie and Francois were never going to be threatened. Yeah. But still, you could, if you're at a place like that, it's just different. Trust me. If it's a procession, well, okay, that's not great.
Yeah.
If it's a procession at the old Nürburgring,
yes, quite.
That's not the same thing as a procession at
Abu Dhabi.
No. So, atmosphere and dare I say it, a strong element of risk, which was a part of it in those days.
Sure.
You were aware of what these guys were doing.
And sliding and
obstacle. All that. That was the thing. So you didn't necessarily need constant overtaking, because if you could, there's a very famous picture of Chris Amon in a Ferrari at Old Hall Corner in Dalton Park in the Gold Cup in 68. And he's in a full opposite lock slide, and the inside wheel is perfect on the white line, and it's just really just a great driver reveling in what he could do, absolutely. You know. And he did that lap after lap after lap, and that in that car at that track was the fastest way around. So you could stand there all day and watch that. You know, and it didn't matter necessarily; he wasn't overtaking somebody every lap.
Yeah, there's a little point in me adding to what Nigel said, because I was born in 1974, so I can only take it from what I've read and seen on films. But one thing I'd say about modern Formula One, obviously, is the circuits. You talk to a photographer, or you look at, you know, I look at a lot of F1 photographs of today, and the only way you can tell circuit from circuit is maybe the colour of the curbing, or you know, the barriers they use, or something. It's these minute details. You know, the F1 photographers have to work so hard to get decent shots of Formula One cars these days, and if they have to, then spectators have to work harder to get good spots to watch cars at their best, and that has to play a big part in it. And you know, that's why I think Formula One's so obsessed with, you know, sort of gimmicky things like Abu Dhabi having hotels to run under and running at night, is because the actual circuits themselves are not all that much to shout about.
But you see, you'd trade a year of that
Oh, yeah.
Just to watch Jochen Rindt or Ronnie Peterson through the old woodcut.
Oh, yes, please. Yeah.
Teetering on the edge and just holding it.
Yeah.
And not quite spinning.
Or Gerhard Berger throwing the Ferrari around Monte Carlo.
Absolutely.
I don't know.
Yes.
Take your pick.
Yeah.
And for that matter, I wouldn't mind seeing Jensen Buttons with the old woodcut now. No, you know, seeing a modern Formula One car on these old circuits would be amazing.
Absolutely. It would look like Scale Extra.
It would look on rails, yeah.
That was the thing. And when you see somebody at 160 miles an hour with the rear wheels trying to overtake the front wheels, lap after lap, that's when you sort of think, Jesus wept. Mm. How do you do that?
Keke.
Yes, Keke, exactly. Keke's pole in 1985. Mm. The world still remembers it.
Ed Foster, this particular question from David Fisher begins thus. You guys have been around for about as long as me, which is obviously a long time. Well,
which of us is he addressing? Yeah.
Is he addressing me with this one? All of 26 years?
Let's be frank, Nigel. You and I have been around, as it were.
We have. We are worn. But,
well, yes, I think. Well, I am. Ed, I mean, okay. Clearly, you didn't see this kind of racing, but clearly you love racing. What's your take? I mean, we're not going back to the 60s, are we? We're not going back. We're not going back anywhere, are we?
No, I mean, you know, as Nigel said, you hear so much about people saying, "Oh, if it only like it was," and all this kind of stuff. But there were races won by minutes. You know, 10 minutes was someone sort of winning a race by. But I think a lot of the things that people miss, and I certainly miss, is, you know, hearing Nigel talk about the pits even 10 years ago to compare to what it was now. I mean, going to the paddock and the pits now is so different. You can't talk to drivers. You can't go anywhere near the cars. You can't see anything. The spectators, you're 50 metres away from the track behind a metal railing. You know, so even if you take along your camera, all you're going to get is it's going to look as though you're watching the race from behind bars. And I think that's certainly something that you do miss in Formula One nowadays. And that's why other racing, like DTM, the touring cars, all that kind of stuff, it's not as high profile. But because it's not, you get to go and actually talk to the drivers. You know, you catch them going from their car back to their motorhome. Yeah. And most of them are actually really pretty willing to chat, unless they've just ditched it. And then they aren't usually so chatty. But, you know, they're very nice and you can talk to them.
We've got to move on, I'm afraid, mainly because my parking meter's going to run out in the
It's a consummate professional.
Yes.
But Rob, didn't you bring your helicopter?
Not today, no. It was bad weather when I left. Why was a point abolished for fastest lap, Jeff Lees wants to know.
Not the Jeff Lees.
I don't think it's Jeff Lees. No, it's spelled differently. It's not the Jeff Lees we know, the racing driver. I don't think it is. Why did we abolish a point for fastest lap? It's quite a good question. I like a point for fastest lap.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it was.
Kimi would have been world champion a couple more times, probably.
Well, he might have been. Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
depending on the day.
Quite
possibly. I don't know why they got rid of it, to be honest with you. I have no idea why they did it. It was a nice idea. It certainly. At a period of time, it ceased to have any worth because, for instance, I can remember in the years when Ferrari were first with Michelin, and they were
always going to get
there were great problems in the early days on some circuits, and quite often in a race. I mean, Gilles would sort of hair off into the lead at the start because that was him. That was his way. You know, I mean, he knew that his tyres wouldn't last, but he still had to do it for him. He still had to do it, you know, because that was his nature. But quite often he'd come in with the tyres in shreds and be back in, I don't know, 11th or something.
Yeah.
So the day was gone. The day was ruined. There was nothing to be won. But he would, just because of his character,
because he could,
put on a set of new tyres and go out and get fastest lap.
Yeah, yeah.
So to some degree, at that point, you know, fastest lap.
Yeah.
You could say, all right, well, at least he would have got a point out of the day.
Well, yeah, exactly.
So there is something to be said for it.
Mm.
It would certainly add an extra element, wouldn't it? If he was a championship decider and it was, you know, there's only a point in it between the two protagonists.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's I've always thought, not so much in the last few years when we've had the Parc Fermé start the race with the fuel, do last bit of qualifying with the fuel you're going to take into the race and all the rest of it. It wouldn't have worked in that era, but I think at a time when qualifying is just simply car absolutely at its most raw for one lap, which is what we should have now.
Of course,
it's what's coming back.
Yeah.
Well, we hope. In those circumstances, I can see every point in a point for pole.
Okay, well, let's not dwell on it, but thanks, Jeff. I think the short answer is we don't know.
While we're on this, let's remember that until, I think, 1960, the Indianapolis 500 was in the World Championship. And to this day, I don't know why it was ever in, and I don't know why it was dropped at the end of 1960. These are mysteries unknown only to the FIA.
Well, anyway, look, you guys out there, don't ask us too many questions like this, because it'd be a very short podcast. Here's a question we like from Mario Pizzi. Mario has just subscribed to Motorsport magazine in Canada. Well, we like people like you very much, Mario, so thanks for doing that. He wants to talk a little bit about Elio De Angelis, which I know Nigel remembers fondly. Well, we all do, but not the greatest racing driver on the planet, but an absolutely lovely guy. Damien.
I got his autograph when I was a little kid, and he was a lovely man. Yeah, so I always liked De Angelis because he had a certain, flair about him in terms of how, he looked like a Formula One driver in many ways, I thought. And he seemed like all the interviews I read, many of them written by Nigel, and, the stories written in those days, he was clearly well liked. And of course, he raced for Lotus, which was as a young British schoolboy was a great thing. And it's well known he was a great pianist, quite a cultured fellow. I'll never forget the Austrian race, the Austrian Grand Prix in '82, when he beat Kekki to the line. It was one of the great finishes to a Grand Prix. So that always sticks in my mind when I think of De Angelis. I think of that before I think of his tragic death, that's for sure. That's the enduring image of Elio De Angelis for me.
Yeah, he was, in fact, that race that day in Austria, that, of course, that was the last time Colin Chapman ever celebrated a Grand Prix win in '82. Elio was an absolutely delightful guy, and he was in many ways from another time, another era. His manners were lovely. He had a great sense of humour. And he was, I guess, I always thought Elio's natural ability was very, very high. And I thought he was almost a sort of classic definition of too nice a guy to be a Grand Prix driver. And of course, as soon as he was in a team with Senna, it was
good night.
Life was going to be very difficult for him. Yeah. But he, in point of fact, I mean, he was very funny about Senna, because in many ways he felt sorry for him. He genuinely did. They were teammates
because of his obsessiveness.
Yeah, I mean, he used to say that he sort of felt sorry for somebody who appeared to have nothing whatever else in his life, and Elio was a very well-rounded guy. I mean, he was normal in so many ways. I mean, he was like Jackie Ickx, and hated to go testing. But it's boring. Jesus, why the hell do you want to test? There's no point in being a racing car unless you're trying to win something. So he would have had problems. Actually, now I think about it, I mean, the modern era would have suited Elio to a T, a testing. Loved it.
Which, of course, makes his passing doubly tragic, of course. In a stupid test session at Paul Ricard.
Yeah, and it was horrific. His life was tossed away. Yeah.
Anyway, I think Elio De Angelis, if I may say so, is a great example of the kind of things that Motorsport magazine does so well, and and what our readers love so much. You know, obviously, although, you know, he's a sort of archetypal, romantic, stylish Italian hero, wasn't he, really? You know?
Absolutely.
Ed, I'm not passing you by.
He used to. Well, the other thing I remember about Elliot was that he used to smoke deliberately in front of Chapman because just simply to annoy Colin.
Well, it's good to end on a smile, I must say. Right, just two quick ones. Other than then, we really have got to go for this month. But Alistair Warren, good old Alistair Warren. I think he's asked us a question on every podcast, so thanks, Alistair. He wants to know if Bernie Ecclestone is going to buy Donington at a knockdown, mud-splattered price. Well, I think the answer is we don't know, but Damien?
Yeah, I don't know, to be honest. I mean, they're saying they've got a lot of interest in the circuit. I'd be surprised if Bernie bought it. I can't see what's in it for him, really, because it's at the moment, it's a club circuit that needs £1 million to get it up and running again for next season. So the person I'd like to see buy it is Jonathan Palmer, because I think Palmer's done such a great job with the four circuits he currently owns.
Good point.
I think he'd do a tremendous job if Jonathan can see it working as part of his group of circuits. Then that would be fantastic for British motorsport, I think.
Yeah, I'd second Damien on that. I think he'd be the one person who could turn it around and make it into a profit-making circuit again. And what's so great is that, you know, going to brands and things like that, you go there for a track day or a race, everything works. You know, the food's actually very edible. There's, you know, you can see things, you can get around easily. And it's just, you really notice it when you go to one of his circuits that just everything works. It'd be great to see Donington get into that kind of place again.
I think almost more importantly, actually, as well, if, you know, Donington is a great racetrack like Brands Hatch. I mean, you know, the great thing about Palmer taking over Brands was that we've still got Brands, in my view.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree.
And if he
took over Donington, I'm sure he'd do the same job there. Hmm. Pity of it is that it's, you know, at the moment it's just a wreck. It's, you know, 12 months ago it was not a wreck, and it had a MotoGP race. Now it has nothing. And the stupidity and the imbecility of the last 18 months actually on so many people's behalf just takes my breath away.
Yeah, me too. And also, just coming back to the question, we mustn't end up like New Labour who don't ever answer the question. We don't really know whether Bernie will buy it or not, Alistair, but I'm sure if the price was right and the resale price was right, he might consider it.
Well, but then we might have two Grand Prix in Britain. Well, he's just done a 17-year deal with Silverstone, so he wouldn't buy it for fun.
I was thinking he might make a very nice residential estate within easy reach of the airport. Yeah. But anyway,
true.
Anyway, we mustn't joke about that really, because it's sad. Donington's got a real history, and anyway, finally we come to Nick Wilson, who asks us about the 2010 regulations. No refueling, of course, as we all know. Does he think this is going to put more emphasis on the skill of the driver? And if I dare return to Niki Lauda, he says that, of course, when Lauda drove for McLaren and won the title, the season was even more action-packed than ever it is these days. Not quite sure what the point is there, Nick, but whatever. Do we think the new regs will put more emphasis on the skill of the driver? Let's start with you, Ed, and we haven't got much longer left.
Well, I think it will, yeah. You know, they're going to have to manage their tyres more carefully. They're going to be carrying a lot of fuel at the beginning of the race on cold tyres, and if they're green or not concentrating, the car's going to come back and bite them. So, I think it will. I think it'll be interesting to see what happens with, well, Lewis and Jensen. Sorry to go back to them again, but it's a very good example. I mean, Lewis is notoriously quite hard on his tyres, and Jensen can barely get heat into them. So to how that plays out over a race distance, I think will be great.
Yeah, I mean, I hated refueling full stop all the way through. I did, because I thought, but particularly at one time when we had everything, when we had all the gizmos, and we had traction control and everything else, and that to me was the low point of Formula One. Mm-hmm. It was really Michael Schumacher won every fortnight. Nobody ever spun.
No.
We would have wet qualifying sessions when nobody spun because of traction control, and the race was formulaic. It was depending on the number of stops you had. It was just all sprint, stop, sprint, stop, sprint, stop. There was no subtlety, no delicacy, no nothing. And I think, you know, banning refueling should... It will certainly... Somebody was saying the other day, this, you know, where he's still racing, this was heaven sent for Alan Prost.
Yeah.
And I think that's true, and I think in the same basis, on the same basis, it could well be heaven sent for Jenson Button.
Generally speaking, Formula One used to be about engines, then it was about aerodynamics. I think these days it's largely, obviously, aerodynamics come into it, but it's largely about tyres, and I think tyres will, you know, can play a big part in next year. I don't think there'll be much more overtaking, to be honest. But I like the idea of drivers having to manage a race over a distance on one fuel load they start with and see how it goes. But I'm not quite sure. I don't think the race is going to massively improve because of it, sadly.
No, I think that probably is right. I do think probably to a degree more subtlety is going
more
to
race craft.
It's going to be called for.
Yeah, so that's a good point. I mean, for me, I'm just delighted that we haven't got any more refueling. Partly because I won't have to have a degree in economics or mathematics to work out who's going to win the race after the second pit stop or even the first pit stop.
And also we can have straightforward qualifying back.
Well, quite, absolutely. I mean, it's going to be motor racing. And yes, there will be more emphasis on the skill of the driver. I'm quite sure of that because the cars are going to start very, very heavy. A lot of these young drivers have never done a Grand Prix like that. They've only ever done three sprints.
Oh, absolutely.
So... Well, we're near the end now, but we have to ask Damien about the next edition, mainly because we'd like you to know what's in the next edition of Motorsport Magazine. Over to you, boss.
Yeah, I think you'll like it. I hope you will. The cover story is an Ayrton Senna story, a very familiar subject, but I think it's quite an interesting take on the man. Mike Doodson, who's been around about the same length of time as Nigel, I think, in the F1 paddock.
He's been around even longer than I have.
That
is a long time, yeah.
He's a fairly eccentric writer, as they go, but he's taken a very interesting take on Ayrton Senna. He knew him very well, befriended him even before he got into Formula One, and talks about this the relationship he had with Ayrton particularly during his early years in Formula One, and intriguingly how he offended Ayrton to the point they fell out and never spoke again after a certain time. It's a really interesting story with some very interesting photos of Ayrton in Sao Paulo, his home, in Isha of all places, on a cricket ground, playing with his model helicopter. And it's a nice story. Other things, there's Andrew Frankel drives a Penske IndyCar, the last Penske IndyCar of the 1997 season. Some fabulous photographs from a photographer we've used recently, who also took the shots of the Mercedes Group C car in the last issue. What else is there? Lunch with Desiree Wilson, which is a really interesting read. And also, of course, our new columnist, Bobby Rahal, who joins us of this issue for the next year, and we welcome him. He's got lots of exciting plans, which he writes about in the issue, regarding historic racing in the US. He's based very much his plans on the Good Revival as the pinnacle of historic racing, but he's got some interesting ideas, which you'll read about. Also, our young man here, Ed, in the office, has his new column, On the Road, where he goes around the country and into Europe covering all sorts of different stories, from car manufacturers to restorers to racing drivers to whatever comes under a racing headline. So that's all entertaining stuff, and all the usual good stuff as well.
There's a story about Tazio Nuvolari, isn't there, in the next edition?
Yeah, some.
I think, didn't who wrote it? Rob.
It's been dropped, has it?
Rob, somebody wrote it.
Rob's, yeah.
Rob Widows. Is that the old Formula 3
driver? He used to write for us, didn't he?
Yes, it might be, actually.
It's not their fault. I should mention also the Hall of Fame coming up in February, which is a very exciting event at the Roundhouse in London. Lots of big people from the world of motorsport going to be attending. Exciting plans. There's more about that in the issue. So that's something we're all looking forward to. I won't say too much now because we're trying to keep a little bit of the suspense going in terms of what's to look forward to. And the final thing I'd like to say is just a big thank you to Alan Hyde, the voice of Toka Radio.
Yeah, yeah.
Who has been our recorded these podcasts and produced them for us this year. Great job, Alan. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
Well, I think we're all very envious of Ed Foster, aren't we? traveling around Europe, picking up stories. I mean,
you should see him in the yellow Lotus Elise that it's like
folding origami, getting me into that thing. It's actually quite a struggle. You would be amazed.
Six foot seven, Ed Foster in a Lotus Elise.
What's quite annoying is if you're going below 20 miles an hour, the roof sits on my head. And I have a sort of an Ed-shaped bulge in it. But you get above that and it pops up with the wind and it's quite comfortable.
I don't feel sorry for you at all.
No, I didn't think about it.
Anyway, yeah, well, on the road, man. Fantastic. That's it for this month, the last one of 2009. We will be back in January 2010, of course. And it only remains for me to thank you all out there for listening. And more importantly, thank you for reading our magazine. Without you, we're nothing. Do contact us to tell us what you'd like to hear about, any questions you may have. We're trying very hard to get a guest for the next podcast, and we'll be doing a couple of special programs next year as well, one of which will be from Le Mans. Otherwise, it's goodbye from us. That's goodbye from Damien Smith, Ed Foster, Nigel Roebuck, and me, Rob Widdows, and see you next year.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.